You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into NFL Live, along with Chris Mortensen, Dan Orlovsky, Lewis Riddick, Tim Hasselbeck. I'm Field Yates. We'll get to you guys in just a moment. But let's welcome in ESPN reporter Ed Werder. And Ed, Jerry Jones spoke for the first time since the NFL draft in April. We just saw Dak Prescott. What stood out to you from what the Cowboys owner had to say?
Well, Field, you know, it's been an inordinately long time since we've heard from Cowboys owner Jerry Jones. 109 days, to be exact. His opinions have been highly anticipated because of the stance he expressed about players honoring the flag 3 years ago when Colin Kaepernick's protest first gained momentum in the NFL. Today, Jones reiterated his own strong personal feelings about respecting the flag, but the powerful Cowboys owner did not reinforce his threats to punish players who kneel during the anthem. Instead, he mentioned that now is a different time, and the word he frequently used as he and his players discussed what their policy will be, the word grace.
These are very sensitive times. I have nothing to prove as far as where I'm standing with the flag and where the Cowboys stand. I have nothing to prove regarding my players and my support of our players. What I do want to show and want us all to be a part of is a word called grace. Grace. Not only grace in our actions, but grace in our understanding where they're coming from. I'm going to have grace. I've had grace. Many of you have written and criticized me for having too much grace and understanding regarding our players, and I probably have. And I'm going to have grace regarding the people that are sensitive about our flag. Somewhere in between there as the weeks, as we get together with our team, as we discuss with the team, somewhere in between there is how we're going to handle it.
Dak Prescott spoke to the media for the first time as well today. He said players continue to discuss how they want to handle their feelings about this unique situation. He said they want to deliver a unified message, but he said he personally would respect those players choosing not to kneel. And as far as failing to secure a long-term contract with the Cowboys, Prescott said he expects that to happen eventually, wants to play his entire career in Dallas. Jones explained that all of the ramifications financially, all the unknowns about trying to negotiate a mega-dollar contract during this pandemic created a lot of issues that just prevented the two sides from coming together. But he, too, sees Dak Prescott as a Cowboys quarterback of the future, Dak.
All right, Ed, great stuff. The saga continues for Dak Prescott and the Dallas Cowboys. And by the way, Prescott will be the third quarterback to play under the franchise tag since it was first implemented in 1993. Previous two were Drew Brees in 2005 and then Kirk Cousins in back-to-back years from 2016 to 2017. Both of those players ended up in leaving free agency the year after. Cousins would go on to sign a three-year, $84 million deal with the Vikings, all of it, 100% of which was guaranteed. Let's talk about that Dak contract and more. It's been a year and a half of negotiations, but what are the challenges to getting a deal done with Dak in the subsequent months going forward?
Well, Jerry Jones mentioned the financial complications with the COVID-19 and the pandemic. And we all know that the salary cap for this year was set at around $200 million, or just short of it. But as you know, the floor in a lost revenue year, that's what's projected for 2020, is $175 million of a salary cap for 2021. That's less money. That's $25 million less money, and we thought it was going to be up around $210 million. So it creates challenges. Some people I've seen say, well, Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, it didn't stop them from going. You know, Dak Prescott, part of the problem here is Dak Prescott wanted a shorter-term contract. As you know, Field, Patrick Mahomes' contract is very team-friendly, especially in the first 2 or 3 years. And Jerry Jones, he'd love to sign a long-term 8-year, 9-year contract. But that's not the way I think that Dak Prescott and Todd France, his agent, see it. And I will add that Dak, Jerry Jones, his son Stephen Jones, who's the senior vice president of football operations, are all very confident the deal will get done. Can it get done next year? We'll see. Otherwise, Dak will be on a franchise tag for that almost $38 million, and somehow they'll have to do a lot of magic tricks to make it all work into their salary cap. But I do believe Dak will be there going forward.
Yeah, things are sitting pretty well for Dak, aren't they, Mort? I mean, as long as he plays well and stays healthy, he's kind of got Dallas right where he wants him, because either they're going to have to franchise him again, and then he'll stand to collect just south of $70 million over the past 2 years. Or, and I don't think, you know, in a down year as far as the salary cap is concerned, that they want to go ahead and swallow that number. Then as far as negotiations are concerned, then he has him right where he wants him, because either they're going to give him what he wants, and either they kind of understand that he's negotiating from a position of power, or they just say, the heck with it, we're just going to scrap it and let you hit the open market, in which case Dak's going to stand to cash in anyway. So as long as Dak plays well and he stays healthy, he is sitting in the driver's seat as far as I'm concerned. And that's exactly where he wanted to be. Betting on himself is what he is doing right now. It's obviously something that proved to be very lucrative for Kirk Cousins. I think in the long run, it's going to be very lucrative for Dak Prescott as well.
Tim, and to Lewis's point, Dak is in the driver's seat, but the driver's seat could lead him elsewhere. Do you believe that he is headed down the Kirk Cousins path with free agency now 7 months away?
I do. I do think that's the direction that he's headed. You know, Mort alluded to, you know, the Cowboys probably having to work some magic to have him as their starting quarterback in 2021, playing on the franchise tag in consecutive years. And so, look, when you if you try to forecast a year or 2 years out, you can easily find 10 teams that could be going through some type of quarterback transition. And at that point, the opportunity to land Dak Prescott would be really enticing, much like happened to Kirk Cousins and why he got 3 years, $84 million fully guaranteed. I think Dak could easily be in a situation similar to that. And I do think that whether it's a year from now or 2 years from now, that we'll see Dak Prescott playing somewhere else.
Yeah, I totally agree, Tim. You know, because in so many people's eyes, last season was, at least statistically, Dak Prescott's best year. And that still wasn't good enough to get the deal done. And I think it's even more tied to their overall team success. Jerry Jones has got a lot of high expectations for the performance of this football team this year. And I'd say Dak has got to lead this team to a deep run in the playoffs and the NFC Championship game for Jerry Jones to feel comfortable with signing him to that long-term deal. And here's the issue that I have after hearing Jerry Jones talk today. He's given us the reasons to not sign Dak Prescott to be, well, it doesn't fit analytically. Well, he wants something, but it's got to fit for our organization. And now it was because of COVID. Or was it because Dak wanted a short-term deal? Like, that's my issue right now after hearing today's conversations, is you gave us so many different reasons for not wanting, or the reason why not to pay Dak Prescott. What is he going to do, or what is going to change over the next 12 months or 8 months for you to drastically change your thought process? And so I think that, agreeing with Tim, that Dak Prescott in 2021 will be playing elsewhere.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, where is his optimism coming from, that being Jerry Jones, as far as his, you know, belief that he'll still be able to get a deal done, because they can't negotiate during the season. Dak's going to be in the driver's seat once January rolls around, the end of December and January rolls around. If he wants to franchise him, fine. I think all of us sitting here, regardless of whether or not we've ever made the kind of money that these high-end players are making, I think all of us would say, yeah, $70 million over 2 years is a pretty good cash haul. I think I'd be satisfied with that. And if you don't want to franchise me, or you can't franchise me, because as Morton alluded to, the cap's going to be down $25 million in 2021, then I think I'll take my chances hitting the free agent market, the unrestricted free agent market. And that, I'm telling you, I mean, we all know, a young quarterback in his prime like that, provided he plays well, is exactly where you want to be. That goes for football, that goes for any business. If you're playing at the top of your game and you're totally free to negotiate on the open market, you're winning, man. And Dak Prescott is going to be winning as long as he wins this year.
And I have great respect and for your guys' wisdom on this matter, but you don't know Jerry Jones then, apparently, like I do. Jerry Jones will get this done. And all his life, whenever there's been a deal to be done, and that even goes back to buying the Cowboys franchise in the first place when he only had a few pennies left in his pocket, he will get it done. Unless Dak Prescott falls on his face, well, none of us expect that to happen, But they will find a way to get it done. I will bet the hair on Orlovsky's hair, him and Lou, that it gets done.
Careful, Mort. Careful.
Mort, what you're saying is he's gonna pay up. That's what you're saying. He's gonna do whatever it takes to make sure.
I'm saying he will find a way to pay up. Yes.
Okay. Well, I want Dan to keep his hair for all of our sake. Go ahead, Dan.
He didn't do it this year, and so many of us thought they will get this deal done. They have to get this deal done. And again, they gave us multiple reasons why not to pay Dak Prescott, coming off of statistically his best year ever. And so I hope it gets done for Dak's case. I just think Jerry can continue to say as much as he wants or as much reverence as he has for Dak Prescott. But until this team goes to where Jerry Jones expects it to go, which is, again, deep into the NFC playoffs, I don't see Jerry Jones giving Dak Prescott the contract that he and his reps think he's earned and he deserves.
Well, listen, let's not forget the Cowboys offered Dak Prescott $34.5 million, just below what Russell Wilson makes as the highest paid quarterback by average per year. The difference was 4 years that Dak wanted versus 5 years, and that average would have been right there. So they weren't that far apart. And yes, there are more challenges ahead, but I would bet on Jerry Jones getting this deal done when it has to get done. And I agree with you. It should have been done last year, but it wasn't. But I still don't believe Dak will be playing anyplace else but Dallas unless, under the Mike McCarthy regime, he just falls flat on his face, and I don't expect that.
I'm with you, Mort. And the silver lining for no deal for Dak, by the way, is that we have lots of content to talk about. He has given us life for months now in regards to his contract. We got to move forward to the Buffalo Bills, as there is some substantial news out of Western New York. The team announced earlier today that they had extended the contract of head coach Sean McDermott. Adam Schefter notes it's actually a 6-year deal in total. He was presently signed for just 2 more years, so he's now with the team through 2025, per Schefter. Take a look at how McDermott has fared relative to other Bills head coaches since 2001. A reminder that over the 16 seasons prior to Sean McDermott being with the Bills, they had 2 total winning seasons and 0 playoff appearances. As you see at the bottom, he snapped that 17-year playoff drought in his first season. He's been there twice. He's brought a culture to this franchise that clearly has them on the up and up. Mort, I want to head back to you. I know you're dialed in with Buffalo. Speak to the impact that Sean McDermott has made in Buffalo in just 3 seasons on the job.
Well, you'd use the cliche of culture. It's a cliche, but it's real. He's created a culture there. Him and Brandon Bean, the general manager, have gotten on the same page on how they were going to proceed. They took a big salary cap hit a couple years ago so they could rebuild this roster. They came together on their quarterback of the future and Josh Allen, and they absolutely believe that Josh Allen is set to go. And then there's Sean, not just with his defense, but the culture in the locker room, how they approach it on both sides of the football. And so with Sean McDermott now in place for another 4 years, which means 6 years, and Brandon Bean, their general manager, also in place, I know Terry and Kim Pegula, the owners of the Buffalo Bills, feel very good about their team. And certainly during a time where the transition is Tom Brady out of the AFC East. They're not taking anything for granted, but they certainly feel good that they got the right coach, the right quarterback, the right general manager going forward.
As we've often seen with teams that have a head coach and general manager in sync, sometimes an extension for one is a prelude to an extension for the other. So maybe Brandon Bean has some good news on the horizon as well. A lot of things are looking up right now in Buffalo.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Big Ten and Pac-12 have postponed their seasons to the spring. More to that, I'm sure, later on. But today, the Big 12 announced their plans to move forward with their fall season, releasing a revised conference schedule set to start on September 26th. Here's Ohio State's Ryan Day and his quarterback, Justin Fields.
I think Justin wants to see what the schedule is, and I think it's our job, and it's we owe it to these guys to make sure that we put the schedule out and put the plan quickly here so that someone like Justin can plan on his, you know, next year, his next few months. And, you know, there was a report out yesterday that, you know, their NFL would consider maybe moving the NFL draft back and us having a, whether it's a spring season or a winter season or however that works out.
13 of the 32 players in Todd McShay's 2021 mock draft won't be playing this fall. 12 of them are from conferences that have postponed the season, including 8 players from the Big Ten and 4 from just Ohio State. The ACC is still planning to play this fall, but Greg Rousseau won't be, as he's already opted out to focus on the upcoming draft. He, of course, a standout pass rusher for Miami. Now let's bring in the great Todd McShay. And Todd, it's awesome to see you. And what was your reaction when you heard about those postponements yesterday?
Well, I'm torn. I love college football as much as anyone out there, and I want there to be a season, obviously. Every player wants there to be a season. We saw that with the movement on Twitter and social media the last couple of days. All the coaches want to play. The universities want to play for financial reasons, and everyone here at ESPN, ABC, and the other networks want to play for inventory and financial reasons as well. So everyone involved wants to play the season. So for the Big Ten and the Pac-12 for their leadership to listen to the medical people and to say, you know what, we're going to give up on millions and millions of dollars this year. We're going to rob potentially these seniors and guys in their last year of their opportunity to play and take on all of this pressure from the fans and everyone around. To make that decision tells me they legitimately are concerned for the players. And I think that is the positive out of all of this. But from a scouting standpoint, I mean, you just talked about the mock draft there. 6 of the top 10 guys, whether it's because they're from those two conferences or with Rousseau coming out of Miami opting out already, 6 of my top 10 in the mock draft are already not playing college football, which means they're not going to play competitive football in 15 months from when they last played to when they play in the NFL, because they're not going to play in the spring. I can tell you that right now. So really, football ends for those 6 players and for everybody else involved in the Pac-12 and the Big Ten of draft-eligible prospects that are projected to go early in the draft.
Lewis, this is brave new territory for a lot of people, but if you're an evaluator right now, to Todd's point, 15 or 17 months between the time these guys last played in college to the 2021 NFL draft, how are you evaluating these players?
You just have to deal with the hand you've been dealt, Field. I mean, that means you're going to rely on 2019 exposures in terms of film and on the field exposure, and that's really all you can do. Obviously, you're going to have to really beat the bushes and really rely on your contacts at these individual schools to make sure that you get, without a doubt, the most up-to-date character, both football and personal, on these individuals. And then you're going to have to really rely on your context to see where these young men are that decide not to play in the spring or winter, as Ryan Day alluded to, if they choose to do so. You know, then you have to rely on your other network to kind of find out what these guys have been doing in order to keep themselves in shape, both mentally and physically, leading up to the pre-draft process and on through the draft. So really, it's going to require a lot of private eye type of work amongst NFL personnel departments. And they're going to have to project forward based off of 2019 what they're going to get in 2021 once these guys are in their buildings, which means this. In the end, it really means this. While you can't control the fact that these guys aren't going to play on the field in 2020, what you can control is your own internal development structure as far as how, what are you going to do with players once you get them? So you better make sure you have that zipped up from A to Z, because these guys are going to need it. They're going to need time to get back into the swing of things as far as playing the game of football on the field. They're going to be, you know, their development's going to have to be accelerated, you know, once they get into the NFL anyway, and they're not going to have the benefit of having played in 2020. So a lot of the onus is going to really just fall on the individual teams in the NFL, and that's just a challenge that everyone's going to have to accept, because it's the same for everybody, and it's unfortunate.
Mort, as of right now, the 2021 NFL draft is scheduled for April 29th through May 1st in Cleveland, but does the NFL have plans to either adjust the draft or perhaps create an expanded showcase for college players based on these postponements of both the Big Ten and Pac-12?
As far as adjusting the draft, the answer is almost 99% not. Yet in the CBA, it allows for it to be moved to as late as June 2nd. But in speaking with enough NFL general managers, and even before this with the pandemic going on, just anticipating this type of issue, they're not going to change because the pandemic is unpredictable. It's unpredictable for the NFL right now. It's certainly going to be unpredictable for the conferences that do, in fact, play. And so they're not going to start adjusting because they don't believe the pandemic's going away. And so, therefore, the one area, you look at the combine, which is in late February. That's one area where the combine is going to be different. They're just anticipating it's going to be different because of the rules. They're going to be different. Remember, last year's combine was not affected by the COVID-19. Free agency is going to take place the new league year in March as scheduled. And the draft at the end of April, early May, as scheduled. So there are not really any energy to moving this around because of what's going on with these conferences. And to be honest, Phil, they don't really believe these conferences will be playing spring football. And the players that certainly you will be scouting, I know one general manager told me yesterday, he's glad he went on the road a lot last year to see these players because that's what they're going to be working off, the film from last year and then the hard work they'll do going forward. I did hear Brian Gutekunst, the general manager of the Packers, suggest maybe a mini combine. And this one note, and Lewis is certainly aware of this, you know, the Power 5 conferences provide great players to the NFL. But, you know, 50% or more of the players in the NFL come from the other conferences outside the Power 5. That's where scouts are going to earn their money, certainly going forward. But I do not think the NFL would drastically change their calendar if they change it at all, because they don't think the pandemic is going away anytime soon.
And I think one thing you have to look for, too, is how can you create the opportunity for players and for evaluators to get more, quote-unquote, tape? Tape is the resume for players coming out. And, yes, there's the medical and there's the character aspects of it, but the baseline is what they put on tape. So now you're robbing guys of 12 to 15 potential games of tape for evaluators to go study. And so I talked to Jim Nagy, the director of the Senior Bowl, yesterday, and we were just kind of spitballing ideas of maybe expanding the Senior Bowl and creating an opportunity where more than just 114 players, which has been the roster in recent years, are able to play. A lot of the opt-out players that decide not to play in the spring or if there's no season at all can come and play even if they don't meet the requirements of being graduated by the time the Senior Bowl is there. And also maybe expanding the Senior Bowl, because the practices are what we get the most out of. The one-on-ones with corners and receivers, offensive tackles, defensive ends, all those sorts of things. Maybe create a bubble in Mobile, Alabama, where you're there for maybe 2 weeks and getting 7, 8, 9 practices rather than 3 practices. And if it's not at the Senior Bowl, maybe it's at the combine. But players need to be able to showcase what they're doing, because Joe Burrow, for example, is a fifth-round pick coming into last year, goes number one overall. There are hundreds of stories of guys elevating their stock because of that last year of college football. And if you don't have that, how can we provide the opportunity for both players and evaluators to get that tape and an opportunity to show that they've developed from what we saw a year ago?
All options certainly be on the table. And Mort, you just referenced that
creative, Todd.
More than 50% of prospects, or close to 50% of prospects, aren't Power 5 players. One of the best that's eligible for the 2021 draft is North Dakota State's Trey Lance, who has just 1 year of starting experience, but he lit it up. What have you been hearing about the impact on Lance of potentially not playing this season?
Yeah, I think Todd has him as the 12th player on his mock draft. If I'm wrong, you can correct me. But I know some people who like him as a top 10 quarterback, you know, behind Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields. And I've heard some might even prefer him over Justin Fields. But here's the main thing is that what they were really looking forward to. Now, he has started 15 games. The model was let's get 30 starts. We need 30 starts. That's what Trevor Lawrence has, by the way. But Fields and Trey Lance are in that 15 range. Now, Kyler Murray was in that range as well. The one thing that I've heard personnel people disappointed as it pertains to Trey Lance is they were hoping to see him on September 5th against Oregon, which is a top 10 school this year, or was going to be a top 10 school. That's not going to happen, but they still feel he will pretty much solidify himself as a first rounder just based off what they saw last year and as they go through the pre-draft evaluation stage.
Yeah, more. I've done more evaluations this summer than I ever have before, getting prepared for a situation like this. And of all the 150 players I've evaluated on tape, I would say Lance is the most underrated simply because nobody knows who he is coming out of North Dakota State, a one-year starter. Think about Carson Wentz. He had injuries at North Dakota State, didn't have a lot of national hype or attention, but he goes on to be the number two overall pick. And when he's been healthy, he's been a really good player in the NFL. Lance has all the skills. We'll get into it in another segment later in terms of what he can provide. But he is so underrated in terms of tools that I struggled with him and Fields in terms of which guy to grade higher. Right now I've got Lawrence 1, Fields 2, Lance 3, but there's not a big gap between Fields at 2 and Trey Lance at number 3.
Again, Todd's way too early 2021 mock draft has now been posted on ESPN.com. A great read as always. It's been quite an offseason for the Cowboys, and it all started with the hiring of Mike McCarthy back in January. During his 13-year tenure in Green Bay, the Packers posted the third best record in the NFL. Then in March, the Cowboys signed Amari Cooper to a blockbuster deal, making him the second highest paid wide receiver in the NFL in terms of average money per year. And in the 2020 NFL draft, the Cowboys added another weapon to their offense, selecting wide receiver CeeDee Lamb with the 17th overall pick. But no storyline was a bigger deal in Big D than Dak Prescott, who was unable to reach a long-term deal with the Cowboys ahead of the franchise tag deadline on July 15th. Here's Dak talking about his contract earlier today.
Business is business, and once I'm in the locker room and part of this, a part of what's going on now, I don't focus too much about the future, just more about today. And so with that being said, I'm excited as hell to be a Dallas Cowboy. I've been a fan of this organization and been a fan of this program for years. I love every bit of the opportunity and the platform that I get to be the quarterback here. I love this team. I'm excited about what we have, what we can do and accomplish this year. So. No frustration as far as that. Once again, I believe something will get done. And with my hopes, I believe I'll be a Dallas Cowboy for the rest of my career.
The saga continues, as does training camp, as teams have now entered phase two of training camp, which allows all coaches and players to be on the field at the same time, not just the strength and conditioning coaches, which was the case in phase one. The Cardinals were back to work. As you can see, a certain new wide receiver they have on their roster. That's right, he wears number 10. His name is DeAndre Hopkins. He's a superstar. Tim, let's get to you. What are your expectations for Kyler Murray, their quarterback, this season?
I have high expectations for him, Field. In fact, I think he's a dark horse MVP candidate. Mm-hmm. I think the improvement from year one to year two has a chance to be really impressive. He's a rare athlete that's come into the league as an already very good passer. Now you throw in, the fact that he's going to get one of the best receivers in the game, a guy that can catch 10 touchdown passes or more in a season. And you pair that with Cliff Kingsbury, kind of his development as a head coach and play caller, and what that could mean for the Cardinals offense and how Kyler Murray plays. So I look at this as an opportunity for Kyler Murray to go out and have a huge year. I'd expect him to be over 4,000 yards passing, maybe around 30 touchdowns or more. And certainly cut down on some of the mistakes he made a year ago. So I think he's poised for a breakout season.
Yeah, I totally agree, Tim. And I'd say two things. First of all, when a quarterback and a new receiver get together, a lot of people will ask the question, well, how long will it take for them to get comfortable with each other, to get their timing or rhythm down? And I would say that's not going to be really the case for Kyler and DeAndre Hopkins. And the reason is, because DeAndre Hopkins is not this timing receiver. He's not a route running extraordinaire. Keenan Allen is the type of guy that you got to spend a lot of time with because he's such a difference to a type of different route runner and getting open. DeAndre Hopkins is more of a contested catch type of receiver. So it's really going to be an adjustment for Kyler Murray, not with timing, but trust. And looking at DeAndre Hopkins while the player is going on, or the play is going on, and going, okay, he's covered, but he's not really covered, because DeAndre Hopkins is very rarely covered, even if the defender is right near him. And so how quickly Kyler Murray gains a comfort level with, okay, I could just throw this ball to DeAndre because he's so great at making contested catches. And so that's the thing that I will focus on with Kyler in the addition of Hop being there. And then I would say this, as important of an addition of DeAndre Hopkins is to their offense, Josh Jones, their third round offensive tackle out of Houston, is just as important, if not more, because if he plays like a first rounder that some people had him pegged as, then this offense takes a huge jump forward, and so does Kyler Murray, because he's the most sacked quarterback in football last year. If he plays like a third round rookie that potentially could struggle, then I could see us having a little bit more of a tempered results when it comes to Kyler Murray in this season, even with Hop. So Hop is great, and Kyler's got to learn to trust him in those contested throws. But Josh Jones, that third-round rookie out of Houston, has got to play big-time football for this offense and Kyler to really take that jump forward and be an MVP candidate.
Well, hey, Dan, his role just grew that much more important as Marcus Gilbert, their veteran right tackle, opted out. Josh Jones, a college left tackle and a great athlete, could be the starter on the right side right away in Arizona.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Three quarterbacks come off the board in the first round of Todd McShay's 2021 NFL mock draft. The Jaguars select Trevor Lawrence with the number one overall pick, while the Panthers take Justin Fields at number four. And it looks like neither Trubisky nor Foles could right the ship in Chicago, with the Bears selecting Trey Lance. That will be at 14th overall. Todd, great to have you back. And how good is Trevor Lawrence compared to other top drafted quarterbacks that you've evaluated in your career?
Well, right now I have a 97 grade on him out of 100. And to give some perspective, if you compare to some of the prior quarterbacks, Andrew Luck in 2012 had a 99. This is the highest grade I have. And again, we're hoping to see a season out of him, and we'll see if it fluctuates. But it would be the highest grade that I have on a quarterback since Luck in 2012. And, you know, when you watch his tape, I saw the Syracuse game. I saw the mistakes he made. I see some nuanced aspects of his game that have to improve. He doesn't have to make a ton of anticipatory throws in that offense. But you're talking about a big, mobile, strong-arm quarterback who can make throws and fit the ball into windows down the field that most guys can't in the college level. Plus the competitiveness that he brings to the table, the way he carries the team. And having done 7 games of his live the last couple years, I love being around him on the sideline, watching how even keel he is. He never gets rattled, and his players pick up on that, and they believe in him. And I think he's only going to continue to mature and get better at some of those small items that he has to improve upon moving forward. He needs a little bit more game experience, but this dude has everything you look for in a quarterback, mentally and physically.
Listen, we all agree Todd is really good at his job, puts in a lot of work. This is about as easy as it's ever been for Todd on Trevor Lawrence. Look, he's looked like a number one overall pick since he came out of high school. I mean, that's just the reality of it. I mean, he shakes your hand, and you know, his hand is basically swallowing your elbow at that point. He is a big, really talented athlete that has more than enough arm, and he's a remarkable runner for a man his size. Look, Todd brought up a couple points about, you know, not really being an anticipatory thrower. There's certainly times where he's a wait-and-see thrower, especially in things over the middle, and he's gotten away with it because of some of the players he's played with at Clemson. He also can probably do a better job when the play breaks down and in creating offense. That was a point of emphasis for him a year ago. I think he did a better job with it, but it also led him to make some mistakes. But make no mistake about it, the physical traits and tools, those are going to be there. Those are obvious. Todd alluded also to the leadership qualities. There is more than enough evidence of him kind of exuding that and doing an excellent job with that at Clemson. You've kind of seen it even play out recently. So because of that, you know, football or no football, Trevor Lawrence, I would expect to be the number one overall pick as well.
All right, Dan, you get the unenviable task of being the nitpicker here on Trevor Lawrence. What's one thing he actually needs to work on with his game?
Yeah, I mean, you've heard it referenced by Todd and Tim. Anticipation throws and getting the ball out of his hands before receivers are open. And those guys mentioned that it's not necessarily demanded of him too much in that Clemson offense, but he's still going to you want to see him develop that and grow that. And I want to preface it with this. He's a kid still. I mean, this is a true sophomore running these offense, and he's had tremendous success. So here's the thing. He's very much Andrew Luck and maybe Matthew Stafford. And I would say both those guys are so physically talented that you don't necessarily have to learn at a young age how to anticipate your throws because you're so good. The arm is so good that I don't need to. I can wait to see if you're open and I'm strong enough and accurate enough to put it and place it where I need to be. Well, that's different in the NFL, right? And so he will need to learn how to get that into his game. It is something that can be learned, and he's a maniacal worker, so that'll happen. So you just want to see him get that aspect of quarterbacking rather than throwing, and that will be the big development for him. And I'd say this, the second one would be this. Don't press. You know, last year in that national title game was the first time that we saw them down and struggling outside of the Ohio State game because that was such a close game, but down and struggling. And he started to aim the football and press a little bit. That would be the two things that I want to see him make steps forward with this offseason.
Well, make no mistake, he is absolutely a no doubt about it prospect going forward. Another one could be Justin Fields, who has just 14 career starts under his belt, but that didn't stop Todd from projecting him to be the fourth overall pick in his 2021 early mock draft. The 2019 Big Ten Offensive Player of the Year led the conference in passing yards and passing touchdowns. He also accounted for 10 touchdowns on the ground, the most by any quarterback in the Big Ten. He managed to throw one interception last season. Dan, what impressed you about Fields in 2019?
Yeah, Field, I'd say the growth in the little things in his game, and I'm going to tell you that the scouts are going to see that as well and watch it on tape and say, man, he was a different guy at the end of the season. This is the Big Ten title game. He's starting to struggle off early in this game. And number one question is, okay, what is his arm strength in the NFL where there's so much spread of the field? Can he push the ball to the boundaries? You're going to see a deep stop up top. Now, first of all, I love the fact that look at his body alignment. He is set up to push this ball all the way to the sideline. A little thing. That's quarterbacking. Second of all, look at the anticipation of this throw. We just talked about it with Lawrence. This ball is coming out of his hands before you see the receiver drop his hips and really get to the top of his route. That is great growth for a kid who's in his first, 11 games as a starter. And then on this ball, drive it out there and get it up high at the face mask to allow this receiver to go make that catch. I did a Justin Fields game early on last year. He did not play like that. He did not do those little things of seeing where that one-on-one matchup was and get his body aligned to throw and then get it out of his hands before the receiver was technically open. And then you watch it happen in the Big Ten championship game and you go, he's starting to really get what playing the position as a quarterback is like, and the talent is marrying that understanding. And so his growth was tremendous. I think at worst, he's the second pick of the draft when we have the draft in 2021. And I'm excited to watch him play in the NFL for a long time.
Todd, if you did have a concern about Justin Fields, yeah, what might it be?
You referenced the I was just going to say that Dan referenced the improvement about Justin Fields. And I think a lot of it has to do with being around a coach who knows how to coach the quarterback position. Ryan Day does a really good job developing quarterbacks. He knows the offensive side. He knows how to put his quarterbacks in good situations. And we saw with Fields, he was able to pick up on things as the season progressed. Now, the one area that I'd love to see is a second season where he is able to pick up on the blitz. The blitz was an area where he really struggled, I thought, last year when he did have some struggles. And it's frustrating knowing that he can continue to get better, but we might not see him on the field until he puts on an NFL uniform as a rookie at the next level.
Can't wait to see these guys play in the NFL. I just hope we get a chance to see at least Trevor Lawrence on a college football field before it is all said and done. Mustard tastes great on pretzels. It's not so fun when you get it on your shirt. And Saints head coach Sean Payton had some fun today with a reporter on the team's Zoom call.
Let me ask you a question. I spilled mustard on my suit. Okay,
generally with mustard, I'd use water, warm water.
Thank you, Coach. Sorry about that. I didn't realize I was muted. But yeah, I tell you what, any suggestion you have in that regard, I certainly would appreciate.
Yeah.
Because it's a conundrum.
I want to blot it. I want to use warm water. I don't want to wipe it. I want to blot it. I want to treat it twice. If you can't put it in the dryer on hot or it's going to be stained. And if none of those things are working, seek outside help.
Great offensive mind, even better at taking care of your clothing. Great stuff there from Sean Payton.